sit down to channel a service, I go through a series of rituals so that the self that is Nidia in this realm can be released and moved to the side, so that the self that is Nidia and can hear the divine whisper is present. Present enough, but just enough, so that the keyboard can be stroked. Yet, as the time for completing this service grew closer, I had no clue what I was going to say. None. And yet the time was approaching. And so I sat down one day and went through my rituals, and I lifted my hands to the keyboard, and I believed that a homily would emerge. And my fingers started moving, and after a few moments, they stopped. And I looked at what I had read, at what I had written. And it was just a few lines for a bulletin. Nothing more. And then I read the title, and the title said, Finding Our Voices. Really? Really, I thought, can you not give me a little bit more to go on? That would be lovely. Because I am a type A personality. I'm an overplanner. I really like things done 6 weeks in advance. Sermons, you see, should be memorized 2 weeks in advance. And I had a few lines, and that was it. And so Creator, as Creator so often does, took a moment to laugh with me. And it was a reminder of no matter how much we, or in this case I, like to control things and feel prepared, that wasn't going to happen. Because in order to speak from a place of authenticity, about embracing being fluid and riding within the ambiguities of the moment, it was necessary for me to spend a few very uncomfortable weeks of feeling wishy-washy. So, again, with beloved laughing with me, I had to sit within my discomfort. Now, one of the things that I have learned from the last 2 years in seminary is that whenever doubt, fear, anxiety cleverly creep up behind me disguised as logic, I have learned listen, beloved always says the same thing. Lean in. Lean in. And so when my head starts and fights and logic spins in my brain and all of the story of the day, whatever it might be, is telling me over and over again why I will not survive this situation, if I can listen to my body and I can listen to beloved, I hear, lean in, and so do. Now that doesn't mean that I've suddenly gleaned a clue of what's going to happen next. I don't know. But what I do know is that everything is going to be okay, no matter what it looks like. All of the things that are coming that I cannot anticipate, if I can lean in, it is going to be okay. And because this I believe, I can allow myself to lean in just a little bit further. And so, trusting my faith and my body, lean in is now my mantra. I think this is part of what Ram Dass means when he speaks of being love. Stop sitting on the perimeter and climb inside. Be love, lean in. Be with whatever presents in that moment. And Krishnamurti says, do you know what my secret is? For you see, I don't mind what happens. And how would our lives change if we didn't mind what happened? Can we learn to lean in and be within this moment? And a few moments ago, Christina began with a reading from the Hopi elders about how the time is upon us to stop clinging to the edges of the shore, but rather to allow ourselves to flow with the water. Because if we refuse to be moved by and with that water, we will drown. But when we can allow ourselves to be moved around by the waters, we are cleansed and refreshed, and no longer is wishy-washy a thing that's out of control or lost in ambiguity. But now we sit within wish-wash, becoming clean, whole, fed. The difficulty with this process is that I still feel out of control, and I fear the judgment of others. And sometimes, as I'm watching all of these things around me, and I'm watching others in my own fear of judgment, I think, my friend is about to do something really silly. And you see, I'm so smart. I can correct it for them. If they would just listen to me, I can solve all of their problems. So here I'm stuck until I listen to my body. And I remember the truth and the wisdom of the Hopi. And I remember that Ram Dass is correct. And everyone can laugh in our own moments, God laughing with us in our discomfort. In our place of being unstable, uncomfortable, judging, fearing judgment, all of these things are lovely talk about as ideals. Yet how do we allow ourselves to move away from the ideal and into actually being cleansed? How do we lean into these things and these concepts and these ways of being? How do we become the warrior that the poet spoke of? How do we remember that we are already that warrior? And for some of us, how do we find hope? Where is the hope? How can I be a person who makes great mistakes and still be a great person? And the truth is, I don't have a manual for you. No how-to for dummies on this one. But I have learned a few simple things that I hope will help at least one person here today. And it begins by suggesting that one way, to navigate between ambiguity and judgment and that feeling of wishy-washiness is to first admit what Father Richard Rohr considers the ultimate of perennial wisdoms, and that is our own fragility. In order to ride in those waters, you have to consciously allow yourself to acknowledge that you are powerless against those boulders. You have to know and accept that there will be times that you panic, that can happen? And can you also accept that you too once clung to that shore and refused to let go? That was all of us. Resisting, arrogant, righteous, lost, afraid, and yet hopeful and seeking, because emotions are complex. Life is complex, and we are complex. So as I look my friend in the eye and I try to explain all of this, I try to explain, I am terrified of those boulders because I know that there are things that can happen that are beyond my control and I may be smashed to bits, and that frightens me. And it is also true that the only way that I am not only going to survive but to thrive is to let go. And that's difficult, because we've been conditioned in this culture to believe that there are facts and truths that are beyond question. And these facts and these truths, they remain the same throughout space, time, and interpretation somehow. And so we've accepted that this idea of living has to be applied to all of the ways that we navigate life. And so we search for these certainties, and we want to cling to that shore. And if I don't have that shore to cling to, I'm not quite sure what to do. And I once actually heard a psychotherapist out of Seattle say that to say the words, "I don't know," is considered an immature answer. She posited that the mature, developed adult would find the correct answer. And when I heard that, I wondered, what if the correct answer or the right answer is not only "I don't know," but "I don't need to know"? And then I wondered, well, perhaps this is what the Buddhists refer to when they speak about non-attachment. Or perhaps my mother, who practiced New Age, passed. Perhaps that's what she referred to. And so I have to go back and breathe in again. I have to pause and listen to the Hopi again and allow myself to reach out, to lean into those waters and allow the wish and the wash to cleanse me so that I can stop clinging to someone else's ideal. And within those waters, within the wish and the wash, there is sanctuary. Where is the peace of this sanctuary? What does that feel like? How do I find that peace? How do I know that peace? Where is, after all, my voice in all of this? How can I live in the waters with the uncertainties and having to balance the dynamic tensions, searching for my voice and not feel completely frenetic and chaotic? How can I do that? And one of the things I always enjoy about hearing a brother, Jamal Rahman, the Sufi teacher, speak, is that he tends to, almost at every service, remind us that in all of Allah's creations, large and small, there is only one place that is large enough to hold all of Allah. That place is the heart. Our hearts, your hearts. This is the place that is large enough to hold the divine as we so experience it. And within the place of the heart would simply never ask us to deny part of our experience. The heart wouldn't do that, but the head said, that's a totally different experience. And so I would suggest that it is within the heart, within the love of the heart, that we are truly free. And so what if I take the teachings of Malcolm Gladwell and his book Blink, which I'm sure many of you know, where Malcolm posits that if we study something for 10,000 hours, we develop an intuitive gut response wisdom. And what if we applied that teaching to studying about ourselves and knowing the truths of ourselves so deeply within our bodies? And I don't mean the narcissistic way that we might try to go. I don't mean the what feels good to me and I don't care about anybody else. That's not what I'm talking about here. I am asking, what if we rise up to our higher selves? What if we honored the ideal of Rumi scholar Andrew Harvey? And Andrew speaks of each of us being a unique representation of the divine, that each of us have come here to learn something that only we can learn. And through our learnings, Gaia herself grows. And so what if in our self-study, we rise up to remembering the face that God knew us to wear before we were born, and we remember and learn what only we can contribute to life? What if we did that? Does that help us to understand that there is enough space in our hearts to hold both sides of the story, to hold all sides of the stories? There's enough room for worth and integrity. There's enough room to understand that my truth may be my truth for this moment and only this moment, and that's okay. And when I think of those things and I feel those things and I breathe these things, that feels solid to me. That feels pretty good. And we began today with what is difficult, and we shall end this sermon by talking about what is difficult. And what we shall end with is, in this place where I feel solid, do I still feel solid when my friend looks at me in a way where I feel judged? What then? What then? How do I feel? How do I deal with the disappointment that I failed to live up to the expectations of another? And so here I suggest that we take the advice of Rumi himself. And Rumi suggests that through our eyes, the beloved is actually peering out through us and with us. And so in that moment where I'm sitting in my truth and doubt has crept up behind me again, and I am sitting in my truth, allowing myself to be cleansed, but my friend is looking at me and I feel judged, can I pause? Can I breathe in and lean in and remember that truly the being looking out at me is beloved? It is beloved's gaze that is falling upon me. And when I feel beloved smiling at me, I feel peaceful and warm and holy. I feel whole, and that moment of leaning in becomes a moment of sharing wholeness with my friend. And in that moment, I can accept that this is the moment here and now, and these are my truths, and my truths might look different from your truths. And as my truths swirl around, they dance. They dance before me, and it is good. It is good.